This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. In a year in which three port towns and leaders have decided not to run for re-election, and with candidate filing week coming right up, this week on the Compass, KPTZ reporter Lily Haight talks with three port towns and city council members about what the job entails and how they juggle their workload with the responsibilities in the rest of their lives. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
This spring, Port Townsend Mayor Michelle Sandoval and City Council members Ariel Spezer and Pam Adams all announced they will not be running for re-election as their terms on City Council come to an end. With candidate filing week approaching, city residents wait in anticipation as one by one new candidates for council come out of the woodwork to fill the three open seats. But what does it take to be a City Council member? The position is time-consuming, but not compensated the way a full-time job would be. Right now, council members receive only $500 a month for their services representing the citizens of Port Townsend. This week on Compass, I'm speaking with council members Ariel Spezer, David Faber, and Amy Howard to discuss what it takes to be a council member and to ask, does the low pay and time-consuming work make it difficult for young, working people and poor people to run for council? And if so, what does that tell us about who is representing our town? So to start, I'm hoping each of you can tell us a little bit about your life outside of City Council. What do you do? Where do you work? What are your other kinds of responsibilities that you do? So maybe we'll start with you, Amy, if that's okay.
Sure. I am the volunteer coordinator at Habitat for Humanity, which is a full-time plus job. I am also the admin assistant for the HR department at the food co-op. And I also have a side gig where I do donation facilitation for other nonprofits around town.
Very cool. And so what kind of other things are you, juggling your time with City Council stuff? How do those things interact?
Well, I'm incredibly fortunate that my job with Habitat has been flexible. I was already on City Council when I was hired at Habitat, so they allow me to schedule my time around those obligations. The job at the co-op is a very part-time, a couple of weekends a month, usually just Saturdays. And the other thing I'm allowed to, kind of say yes or no and do when I need to. Aside from that, trying to fit in any sort of personal obligations or, doing things like the dishes becomes a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what about you, David? What do you do?
So I'm an attorney. I am one half of a local law firm here in Port Townsend. Thankfully, I am my own boss by and large. So I can coordinate my schedule around what I have to do for counsel and other obligations in my life. But at the same time, because of being my own boss, I also there's a catch as much as you can, and what is it, you eat what you kill is the phrase, right. So it's definitely it takes some juggling, or to mix metaphors, walking a knife's edge in terms of trying to make sure I'm able to dedicate enough time to my practice while also not neglecting my obligations to the city.
That makes sense. And Ariel, do you experience that as well?
I do. Yeah. So I'm also an attorney. I work for the state attorney general's office. Like council member Howard, I was on city council when I took my current job. And so I was fortunate in the sense that my employer has been really understanding and knew that I was on city council and had those time commitments. But it is a lot to juggle. I carry a regular court caseload in both Jefferson and Clallam. And so there often is, I'm checking multiple calendars to make sure that I can get to the city council meetings that are during the day, as well as my work obligations and various court hearings. And then, you know, getting to the council meetings in the evenings, you know, trying to find time just to eat or go to the bathroom is sometimes, you know, kind of a challenge. And then in addition to my work, I also serve on a couple nonprofit boards. And then, you know, like the other council members have mentioned, you know, have a family. And so it, you know, sometimes you feel like it's, you know, a bit of a, like, I picture a like flight map where various airplanes are like flying into an airport from all directions. And just like the level of coordination that has to happen to make it all work on a daily basis is, I think, quite impressive for all of the council members.
So I'm curious, and this will be helpful for anyone who is, you know, thinking of running for council. What kind of a time commitment is it really? You know, we know there's the Monday night meetings. Sometimes those go to 10:30, you know, late at night. But other than that, how much of a time commitment is it?
And I would say that it varies wildly. It depends on what's in front of council. It depends on how many committee commitments you have. It depends on how many outside boards you're serving on in your city council role. And it depends on how familiar you are with the topic at hand. So when it's something that's just coming in front of us for the first time, that takes a lot more homework than something that we are familiar with. And the more time you are on council, the more things you are more familiar with. You don't want to rest on that familiarity. You want to be able to read and make sure that you're up to date. But it does get a little bit easier the longer you are on council. A little bit is the key there.
Yeah. Is that the same for you guys as well?
Yeah, I would say it's very similar for me. I mean, on any given week, it could be like at minimum, like, you know, 15 to 20 hours is maybe like a light week to like 50 hours, you know, depending on there's often days of the week where I have every single day there's a council meeting or a council related meeting for an outside intergovernmental board. And often those meetings can last 2.5, 3 hours. I mean, our council meetings can last, you know, 4 hours, you know, longer. The intergovernmental boards are often, you know, sometimes 1.5 to 2.5 hours. And so then you don't only have the time that you're in the meeting, but as was mentioned earlier too, you have the time that you're preparing for the meeting. And then of course you have the time that you want to be responding to constituents and, you know, all of the residents. And that's obviously really important, I think, to all of the council members, is to make sure that we're getting back to people in a timely manner and being as responsive. And often what I find is that the questions that we get, you know, you don't always know the answer. And so you have to go research or kind of inquire from other people. And so there's the time that goes into getting the answers that you need to get back to people. And that can just depend on, you know, when people have questions and what's going on in the community and various concerns. Definitely there's a lot of ebb and flow.
Yeah. And I'll just to piggyback on that, there's a ton of fuzziness to the schedule for council. I mean, there's certain things that, as Ariel was noting, that are, you know, pretty set scheduled things, like the meetings, though, of course, their duration can be, who knows? Sometimes we expect a meeting is going to be 1.5 hours and it runs for 3. And sometimes the other way around. It's really hard to know those things. But then moreover, like, yeah, those constituent communications. I mean, you go to the grocery store, you go to the post office, you get stopped, and sometimes you end up talking to someone for 1 hour, and you get random phone calls, you get emails, and while you're doing your regular job, someone wants to jump in and have a conversation with you about council-related topics. So, yeah, I mean, the hour commitment kind of, I would say, you know, I usually estimate a little bit lower than Ariel, but maybe I'm also not putting in as much effort as Ariel does, because she does everything to 110%, which, you know, credit to her for being such an incredible public servant. I usually estimate like a kind of a guarantee of 10 to 15 hours a week, and then everything that gets fuzzy beyond that, which probably regularly doubles that time commitment. But it is definitely true that week in, week out, it shifts dramatically, as both Ariel and Amy noted, based on how many outside committees you're on for that given week, what are the particular issues that are coming up, how familiar you are with the topics. All those things are very well said.
And so how do you deal with committee meetings that happen at, like, say, 10 a.m. when you have a full-time job?
Yeah, just advance notice. The one thing that I'm really grateful for about government is meetings usually have to be publicly noted, and there's a time frame for that. And so you're always going to know a couple days in advance. And I feel like that gives us time to make arrangements with our employers and to get coverage. It's very rare, but it's a horrible feeling to realize that you've accidentally double booked yourself and that you have to cancel, and just trying to be really upfront with people about, you know, what your time commitments are. I often let the various staff that I work with at the various, you know, governmental agencies where we have our intergovernmental meetings, I let them know, like, what days I just can't be available so that they can work around that. And they've all been wonderful. I mean, the thing that's really nice is everybody knows that most people on city council work. And so they understand that they kind of have to accommodate our schedules as well.
This last month was the first time that I missed a committee meeting because I had a work obligation that came up suddenly, abruptly, and I didn't have time to give anybody any notice. So they were waiting for me while I could not attend the meeting. And that was actually a meeting that Ariel chairs. So I was able to, you know, apologize for that afterwards, but there was no getting around it. And for the most part, that hasn't been something that I've experienced, though that was the first time in my tenure that that's happened. And I felt awful. I felt horrible when I had to apologize for it. And it wasn't something that was under my control at all.
One thing I wanted to talk about a little bit was talked about at this past Monday's city council meeting, which was the new commission that you guys talked about that will be looking at city council's salary. And so right now, correct me if I'm wrong, a council member makes $500 a month.
Correct.
And the mayor makes $750 a month. So they make a little more.
Yes.
So talk about this, you know, process of hoping to increase the salary. Why is that important? Why do you guys think that's a necessary thing to happen right now? And what are you hoping to see come of that?
Well, I'll just start by saying that I think both Councilmember Howard and Deputy Mayor Faber have they've been interviewed about this topic a lot more than me. And so I think they may have some more kind of refined thoughts, but you know, I'm very excited about the commission. I think it's really needed. And I think that it truly is one of the only ways to create more diversity on city council. And it's necessary in order to give city council the kind of attention and I want to say like the meaningfulness of the position. And to really give it that weight, it just needs to be compensated more. Obviously, it's hard because nobody wants to be seen as giving themselves a raise. And so what I like about this current model is that it's not like we're giving ourselves a raise. We're giving the next positions a raise. And, you know, maybe some of those people will be the same, but it's, you know, at least there's kind of that distance to it. And I just think that I hope that more people will be encouraged to run if they see that they will be compensated for the time that goes into the role.
While we're talking about this, the salary increase that the commission is going to be working on, I'm just curious to hear if you guys think that the current, you know, setup and the current salary, but also just the current setup of having it be kind of a partial volunteer or just a, a small compensation, is that equitable for everybody? And how do we make it more equitable? Even going beyond just salary increases, are there ways that we could totally change up how we do city council? For example, the county commissioners, I know, they're a full-time paid position, and they get to dedicate all of their work days to that elected position. Is that ever in the cards for city council?
Ooh, just asked a lot of questions all tangled together that I don't think we're going to be able to fully parse for you there. So the thing that I'd like to note right off the top is that time is one of the most consistently undervalued things in American society. We don't value people's expertise, and we don't value the time that they've put into learning things. When you look at that amount of time, it's not just the time that's spent doing the work, it's the time that's spent learning how to do the work. I don't know about making a huge change like you're suggesting, because I don't know that our actual, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a sustainable change that we can make at the council level right now because of the way that our tax structure is in Washington State. We don't have the income to be able to fund the council positions as full-time jobs like that with the way things are structured, and still provide actual services to our community. So, well, I am, you know, hoping that there is some recognition of the value of time. I understand that it is unlikely that it will be made into a full-time and paid position like Bainbridge Island is making a change in that direction right now. I see a value in community service and civil service, being in the partial, you know, volunteer realm, but that doesn't allow for people who are lower income to serve because it continues to undervalue their time. It undervalues my time and as a lower income person. And at this point, I have a relatively well-paying job with benefits that's allowing me to serve on council. If I were in a more service-oriented position like I have been previously, if I were still working in restaurants, there's no way I could do this. And those are people that are a part of our community that deserve to be represented on council by members of that community.
Yeah, so it's like it changes the makeup of our council, really. David, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I wanted to speak a little bit to, well, a couple of different of the questions you've asked. One is in terms of the idea of making council a full-time position. I mean, Amy was spot on in saying that it's economically not feasible given our very limited budgetary resources. But another aspect of council that you keeping it a part-time position is also beneficial in that it keeps a diversity of voices on council. I mean, you end up with a lot of people of a lot of different potential walks of life, including things that they do for a professional job day in, day out, bringing their experiences to bear on a consistent basis. I mean, there are, of course, downsides to that, because there would be people who can't take time off to do council work while they're doing other jobs. So it's a tough one, but I think there is hopefully a kind of a net positive by having it be sort of a secondary gig, so to speak. I want to take a step back and talk about the actual commission process, because you asked a question about that before. And, you know, there's two different ways Washington state law authorizes council members to basically change their rate of pay. One would be if we voted on it ourselves and said, we're going to have, you know, set salary for councils at X dollars per month. If we did that, then the that new salary would only come into effect after a given seat has been elected again. Either the person has been reelected or has turned over to a new occupant. The commission allows us to appoint unrelated people, third parties, to decide our compensation for us. And as soon as they make that decision, barring a potential for a referendum, then the new compensation comes into effect immediately. And I think that's beneficial in a couple of respects. One is we do have members of council who are struggling to make it work right now, and making them wait a couple more years when it's been since 2007 the last time compensation was touched. It probably wasn't sufficient then. That, you know, making folks wait even longer to be valued appropriately is to my mind not a non-starter. But as I said on Monday as well, the downside of voting our own compensation is that there's so much distrust in local government or government period, that voting our own pay increase just gives people yet more reason to be cynical. And if we instead turn it over to third parties to make that decision, it has a better kind of PR aspect, I suppose, to be cynical myself about it. But it also means you're going to get third parties looking at what they think it should be valued at, not us just saying we think we're undervalued and we should be paid more. Now, I hope that third party decides to increase compensation in a reasonable way. But, you know, we don't know what that's going to look like at the end of the day. And then as far as the equity side of the equation, when you do not sufficiently value the time that someone is going to put into a job like this, you then end up asking a lot of someone and you end up limiting the pool of candidates in a way that stops you from having a diverse viewpoint on council. I mean, you're going to end up with people who will either put themselves through the wood chipper, as Ariel and Amy both have been doing in the role, or people who are independently wealthy or otherwise, you know, able to sort of, you know, backfill their compensation, which is me. I don't want seven of me on council. That I think would not be an appropriate way.
Nobody does, David.
Thanks, Amy.
No, but that makes sense. I mean, especially since I think the timing of the commission to look at the salary and the compensation is perfect right now, because next year we're going to have almost a totally new council with three new members. And so that kind of leads me to my next question is, what are you guys hoping to see in the next year?
Well, I'll just start by saying I really hope people will run, and that there will just be a diverse set of qualified candidates, and that there can be, you know, healthy debate about issues that matter to people. I know I was really surprised the year that I ran, not a lot of people ran. And in fact, I was unopposed. And, you know, while that certainly makes the campaigning a bit, you know, easier, I suppose, you really don't get that kind of rich dialogue that you get from, you know, when there's multiple people running for the same seat. And so I, you know, it's not like I wish anyone a difficult campaign, but I just want there to be a lot of people who are interested, so that people are having good discussions and that different ideas are able to like come up and be discussed.
You know, I think it's important to, I agree with Ariel in terms of hoping that we have kind of a robust election process, and there's a lot of good ideas percolating around discussion, and the community is involved. And that's the key. I think the community should be involved in council as much as possible, because, you know, we local government touches people more than any other aspect of government. And a lot of people don't seem to realize that. And so, you know, the more we can get attention on local government and the things that we're doing and the things that we have to deal with as a community, the better for all of us. But, in, you know, other than that, in the long run, I mean, I hope we end up through that process with an always more representative council.
What about you, Amy? Do you have any hopes for the future of council or for this election season?
I would really like to see some normalization and some return to routine of in-person meetings. And I really genuinely miss the connection of being in chambers. And also, I don't want 10,000 people in my living room every Monday night. That wasn't something that I signed up for. So that's what I really am looking forward to. And I think that if we don't get to return to that and we're bringing three new people on, we'll really be missing something. So that's my hope.
Well, one last question for you guys, and then I'll wrap it up. For anybody who might be listening to this and thinking, hey, maybe I should run for city council, do you guys have suggestions, tips, resources for them, anything like that for people who are interested?
I have some immediate thoughts. I mean, one key is, and it's difficult while we're still dealing with the pandemic, but, you know, getting out and talking to people you don't know. Find a way to have communication with people who you don't normally talk to, and get those perspectives in town. You know, show up at local events, again, when we're not in the midst of a pandemic still. But, you know, and then also beyond that, it really is helpful, kind of the other extreme of that, to engage with people who you know are well-connected in local politics and organizations and so forth, and get perspectives. And, you know, if you want to win a campaign, one of the best ways to do is to get a broad base of support amongst people who other people listen to.
I would be happy to have a conversation with anybody who was considering running or is running. I have done some very non-traditional campaigns, and I have a zero expenditure goal that I had with my campaigns. and tried to be as eco-friendly as possible. So those are all things that are outside the norm a little bit. And for example, I won't doorbell because I find it very invasive when people doorbell me. So what I did was I offered a sort of I will come to your event. I will speak to anybody, any house party, are you having a barbecue and you want me to come and talk to you and then I'll go away. I don't need to be there for your whole barbecue. So there are a lot of ways to do campaigning that are not necessarily the straight white guy traditional, that we can explore as a community that might be a better fit for some of our candidates, especially if you have a full-time job while you're running.
I would just add to what everybody has said that I do think it's helpful to sit in on some meetings. By no means should you feel obligated to come every Monday night, you know, until you're elected. But I do think it's helpful to really just get a sense of how it works and some of the issues that come up. Like, there's such a wide, you know, variety of issues that I think just getting exposure to that so that you understand like, okay, this is like the range that I'm going to have to engage on. That's really helpful. And I also think that what I found really helpful was talking to people who had been elected to various positions in the past. And so, you know, whether it's city council or any other elected position, just doing those informal informational interviews is so valuable to, you know, ask people, what was it like for you? You know, what were the highlights? What were the lows? And I think you really learn a lot. And of course, like, everybody's different, so they're going to tell you their own story, but inevitably there's good takeaways and sort of tricks and trades that, you know, that you pick up. And so I would encourage people to reach out. And just like Councilmember Howard said, you know, if anybody wants to call us, I know that, you know, we're all open to it. And I'm very excited to talk to anyone who's interested in running. And just whatever questions you have, I'll do my best to help shed some light on what it's like or, you know, how the different aspects work.
Right? Same. Very much happy to talk to anyone.
If you're interested in running for an elected position, candidate filing week begins May 17th. You can apply for candidacy on the county auditor's website. Go to co.jefferson.wa.us and click on Elections. With City Council members Ariel Spezer, David Faber, and Amy Howard, this is Lily Haight for KPTZ Community Radio News.
This is KPTZ News Director Steve Evans. If you're a regular listener to KPTZ, as I am, you are probably already aware that we are soon going to be celebrating our 10th year on the air. For a week starting Thursday, May 13th, we will be bringing you lots of special programming, not only looking back upon our many proud accomplishments during our first decade, but excitedly looking forward to a future that will kick off sometime this summer with our move to our new studios in the heart of Fort Worden's Makers Square. We hope you'll stay tuned in and join us in our effort to make KPTZ an ever-improving center for keeping our community connected for decades to come. This week's Compass was written and produced by Lily Haight. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ, 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.